This is an SJC Radio production.
Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Mm. Hello Fresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.
It's that time of the year. Your vacation is coming up. You can already hear the beach waves, feel the warm breeze, relax, and think about work. You really, really want it all to work out while you're away. Monday.com gives you and the team that peace of mind. When all work is on one platform and everyone's in sync, things just flow wherever you are. Tap the banner to go to Monday.com.
This is Pit Stop with Mr. Bird on SJC Radio.
Welcome to episode 1 of season 9 of Pit Stop. Today I'm joined by my brother Stephen and also Max. Hello, Stephen.
Hi, Nicholas.
We'll start off, I think, with MotoGP. So it was opening round at Qatar at the weekend.
Yes.
So let's think about results. Sprint race, that was a win for Jorge Martin.
Sort of business as usual, isn't it?
Who was in second place in the sprint?
Brad Binder.
Yeah, and third place?
There was Aleix Espargaró on the Aprilia.
That's right, yeah. And in the MotoGP itself...
Again, business kind of as usual, really. But Bagnaia wins the big race. Brad Binder second, again, very consistent. Jorge Martin third.
Yeah.
And...
Mark Marquez,
I think. We've all been looking for Mark Marquez fourth.
Yeah. Well, okay, what are your thoughts about the sprint and the main race? Any thoughts?
It was to be expected, really. I mean, I kind of thought Jorge Martin would win the sprint. He's seen the sprint, so he won that, as I expected. I was very impressed with Brad Binder taking it to the Ducatis. And Aleix Espargaró, we know... the Aprilia's got pace, so it was good to see him on the podium. So kind of sort of as expected, really, in the sprint. Mm.
And the main race?
Again, the main race was interesting. Bagnaia kind of got away and sort of had it his own way. But I mean, the intriguing thing for me again is was Marc Marquez in the long run. I think he's looking very ominous for the rest of the season because I think he's only going to get better the more he gets to know that bike. So. I was really impressed with the way he started. Also, the way he sort of kept his tyres in order as well. Didn't go crazy. So this may be the new mature sort of Marc Marquez. I'm really excited to see what it brings. The star of the race, of course, was the boy wonder, the new kid on the block, Pedro Acosta, and he really did live up to all the hype. And I couldn't believe my eyes. The rookie in his first race overtook Marc Marquez on the Ducati, which is just astonishing. So I think this kid is unbelievable. I've been following him since Moto3, and I think he's, you know, like Rossi, like Marquez, he's this one of these once in a decade talents. And just excited to see what happens. And you know, could he win a race this season? It's not out of the question.
Yeah, I think the thing is, I think if we go back to is it 2013 when Marc Marquez moved up to MotoGP.
Yeah.
He won his second race. I don't think that's possible nowadays because I think the bikes, with all the sort of garage, with all the gadgetry and the aero, I think the jump from Moto2 to MotoGP now is too big for anybody to win as quickly as Marquez did in 2013.
Yeah.
I think there's too much to adjust to. There's a lot of, as Marquez was saying, there's an awful lot of aerodynamic wash from all the aero on the bikes.
Yes, I know.
So you've got to adjust to that. I personally don't think Acosta's going to win a race. I don't think he's going to win a race this season. I think what will happen next season, he'll probably step up to the factory KTM team.
Yes.
I just don't think it's possible now. And also, during the main, although he was brilliant throughout the weekend, in the main race he faded because his tyres...
Yeah, that was probably a bit of inexperience, actually, because he certainly went hard out in the middle phase, and of course his tyres suffered there. But he still finished eighth, I think, in the main race, which was, you know, considering he faded back to eighth, it's just amazing. You know, for a rookie to finish eighth is astonishing, but to have been up as high as he was just amazing. I mean, Marquez winning his second race was unbelievable. I remember Rossi took a good half season to win his first race. He didn't win until Donington, so well into the season. So, hey, anything's possible. And, you know, I think that gas seems to be as good as the factory bikes in some way. So we'll wait and see, but I'm just really excited to see what he can do.
You mentioned Marc Marquez just now. I'm not as convinced as you that, I mean, he did very well, don't get me wrong. I don't think we're going to see Marc Marquez back to the level he was in 2019. And Neil Hodgson mentioned this, and I kind of agree with him, that the level of rider in MotoGP today is much higher than it was in 2019. 2019, I mean, Marquez was amazing, but there wasn't a lot of opposition. I mean, Rossi was obviously past his best then. The KTM weren't competitive at all in 2019, whereas now you've got riders like Bagnaia, you've got Martin, you've got Binder. I think the level is much higher than it was in Marquez's heyday. And I'm not...
Interesting.
I think he might win races, but I don't think he's going to be a contender for the championship. I think it's going to be between those three, Binder, Martin and Bagnaia, who during both races were at the front, weren't they?
Yeah, no, you may all be right. You may all be right. I mean, he's still adjusting to that bike, but remember, he's Marc Marquez. You know, he's a phenomenon. He's a freak, really.
But it's been a long time.
I agree, but I think if the bike is within 10%, I think it is. I think he can do the rest, and I think he'll build as the season goes on. So confidence.
It's been a long time since he's been on a competitive bike, and also I think he has to adjust his riding style to the Ducati. So it might be, as you say, later on in the season he might be in a position to challenge for wins.
And also, what I would say, when he was on the Honda last year, he was doing things the Honda shouldn't have been doing. He looked remotely competitive, and again, this new Honda apparently is better than the old bike. And what was the first top Honda? Zarco in 10th or 11th, you know. So it just shows you the miracles that he was performing last year, and I have confidence that the others need to watch out or make hay now, because I think he's coming.
Got to be honest, I was slightly underwhelmed by both the races. I mean, the sprint race, perhaps. I mean, I was watching the Six Nations rugby on Saturday, and we had two unbelievable matches, and I thought, oh, great, well, I'll watch the sprint race live, and it just seemed a bit. As you said, it was,
kind of business as usual, wasn't it?
Yeah. Business as usual. So, I guess, I don't know, it was just a little bit disappointing. The main race, I thought, was particularly disappointing because the one thing the riders mustn't do, you must not allow Bagnaia to get into the lead on the first lap. You mustn't do that. And they allowed him to get into the lead. And it was kind of over then. And it never really got going, I felt. Another disappointment in the main race was Aleix Espargaró, who most people were tipping for victory because of his pace in the sprint race. Never materialised in the main race at all. So the main race, for me, never really got going.
Another observation in the main race was just how far the Japanese manufacturers have fallen. I mean, goodness me. I watched the ITV4 highlights. I didn't really see the Yamahas or the Hondas at all in the coverage.
Yeah.
I just don't understand how the Japanese manufacturers have fallen back so far. I can't understand it. And
Honda have made some progress. There's no doubt about that. Unfortunately, Yamaha have made virtually no progress. So the season really is a write-off already for Yamaha, but they've made changes to the concessions. So both Yamaha and Honda can do an awful lot of testing, even with the MotoGP riders. So they are being given a huge amount of help this year. So we should see a big improvement in their performance as the season goes on.
Yeah, they're going to need all the help they can get, and it's going to be a long road back because, they've just been left behind.
Let's move on to Moto2. Surprising result in Moto2. Alonso Lopez won from Barry Baltus in second, and third was
Garcia.
Sergio Garcia. Nobody would have predicted that podium. I thought the Moto2 race, unlike the MotoGP, I thought the Moto2 race was absolutely brilliant. And well, I think what was interesting there, and I think Moto2, they've changed tire manufacturer, haven't they? They've gone from Dunlop to Perez. And it's very clear that most of the riders, most of the teams haven't got to grips with these new tires. So I don't think the results in Qatar,
I thought the same thing, actually. I don't think it's a fair representation of what's going to happen throughout the season.
No.
Because it's and changing tyres is an enormous change, actually, considering that the bikes are generally the same. So if you change the tyres, it's a major thing to change. So a lot of people are still getting to grips with that. And but I was very pleased to see Alonso Lopez, overshadowed by his teammate last year. And in fact, when I was watching the highlights, I thought it was his teammate in front. I didn't realise towards the end it was actually Alonso Lopez. So very pleased for him.
Unbelievable pleased. He smashed his windshield as he crossed the line. I understand why, because last year he should have been challenging for the title, and he was completely outclassed by Fermín Eldegar. And he must have been so frustrated, because by season's end, people were talking about maybe Eldegar going straight up to MotoGP this year. Yeah. And he must have been thinking, that should be me. So that's why he was so happy. Eldegar was nowhere, simply because I think it was the tyre issue.
I think so.
So I think, you know, come the next race, I think we're going to see a very different podium.
I agree.
But it was a fascinating race. I mean, you had Aaron Canet, who qualified on pole, I think by some margin. He then fell back at the on the opening lap. He then went back to the lead of the race. And once he got back to the lead of the race, he then dropped like a stone. And he was lapping about 2 seconds slower at the end of the race. And a lot of riders had the same predicament, that they were lapping, you know, up to 2 or 3 seconds slower at the end of the race because they'd lost all grip with their tyres. So it made for a fascinating race. Sergio Garcia apparently is... Well, what's interesting, Sergio Garcia in third, he was on a speed up as well. So it might be maybe the speed up chassis is slightly kinder on its tyres.
But
that doesn't account for Eldegar, who was nowhere. Apparently, Sergio Garcia, they were saying, has always been very easy on his tyres. So that probably counts for his third place. Barry Baltus finishing second, nobody would have seen that. He's a relatively big rider, so that's a disadvantage when it comes to looking after your tyres. But he didn't seem to have any problems. It was a fascinating race. Move on to Moto3. Moto3 was a brilliant race. Came down to the last corner. David Alonso.
David Alonso. That's
from
right.
Holgado.
Danny Holgado.
I think it's Forest.
From a new name to me, Furusato. That's a new name to me.
I mean, no surprise with David Alonso. I mean, he's definitely the favourite, probably, and second favourite's going to be Holgado. What was interesting on that last lap, Alonso was in sixth at the start of the last lap. He's so aggressive, and he forced his way to the front. That he made the last corner move on Holgado, but he is so aggressive, and he's definitely the favourite for the championship. That was a brilliant Moto3 race.
Yeah. The other thing about Moto3 is, well, they've also changed to Pirelli tyres as well. So they've had a light Moto2, they've gone to Pirelli. So again, there's a bit of sorting out of tyres, I think. So,
I
think Holgado and Alonso definitely.
But it went to form. I mean, everybody's expecting those two, to challenge for the title. So there are no great surprises there.
Yeah, exactly.
Right, we're going to move on and talk about an event which took place probably about a month ago, the opening round of the World Superbikes.
Yes.
So let's just
very excited about this.
We've got three races there. So first race was won by Nicola Bulliger on his World Superbike debut. The yep. He's got the Super Pole race and the second long distance race. They're both run by Alex Lowes. What was your take on that opening round of the World Superbike?
Well, I was incredibly excited about the start of the season because there have been some big rider moves amongst the two of the top three riders have changed teams. So Toprak has gone to BMW from Yamaha, and Jonathan Rea has left a very successful tenure at Kawasaki to go to Yamaha, taking Toprak's place. So that was two major moves. Plus, you've got the return of Andrea Iannone from a 4-year ban, which is very exciting. The Maniac is back.
Yeah.
And also Sam Lowe's coming across from Moto2 on the Mark VDS Ducati. So some really exciting rider changes. And and of course, Nicola Bulliger coming up from Supersport, graduating to the big team. It was fantastic. I mean, World Superbike does not disappoint. The racing was close, and yeah, it didn't disappoint at all. Very impressive, Bulliger on his debut. To win first time out is sensational, actually. Also, interestingly, Locatelli was second, second actually in the first race and the sprint. And he looks to be more aggressive than he has been. I think maybe he's coming out of the shadow of Toprak, yeah. And I think he could be a contender throughout the season. And of course, in the first race, Andrea Iannone scoring a podium on that lovely yellow Ducati was just sensational. He's not raced for 4 years, and it looked like he hadn't been away. So very impressive performance.
Poor old Jonathan Rea had a weekend to forget, didn't he?
Well, I know it was a disaster, really. I don't really know why. I'm sure he'll recover it, but certainly not the season, the start of the season that he expected, or we expected, really. Toprak, the other rider who made the big move, I think had a great weekend, actually, in contention for all the races, had an engine blow up in the second main race, which is unfortunate, but he was always battling for the top three. And at one point I noticed, I think in the sprint race, that he was sort of top three, and the next highest BMW was outside the top 10, and I suddenly realised that what BMW needed was an alien aboard their bike. Plus, BMW have got a fantastic test team in Sylvain Guintoli and Bradley Smith, so BMW are really serious this year, and I think it's going to be really exciting seeing Toprak on that BMW. So yeah, World Superbike never disappoints, and as I said, is it motorsport's best kept secret? Possibly it is, but it's certainly worth following this scene. It's going to be great.
Tell you what's good, what impressed me about the opening round is that for the first time for a very long time, we've actually got strength and depth. The last few years, you know, most of the podiums, the large majority of podiums have been Jonathan Rea, Toprak and Bautista. And very few other riders, you know, managed a podium. Whereas this year we've got actually Iannone, we've got Sam Lowes, we've got Bulliger, Alex Lowes, of course. There's actually strength and depth, which is something that I think World Superbikes has been lacking for the last few years. So
very much. You've got Grand Prix winners, Iannone and Petrucci. You've got a Moto2 champion, former champion. The depth in the top 10 is sensational, actually. And I am just so excited about what was interesting is that the result of the Sunday, Lowe's winning both, I didn't predict that.
No, I don't think
maybe he's coming out the shadow of Jonathan Rea and will be. Yeah. But however, what I would say is that his last race win was at Phillip Island 4 years ago in his debut race for Kawasaki. So he always goes well there.
Yeah.
But, you know, really pleased for him, actually, because he's a solid rider. But yeah, I'm really pleased to see him on the top step.
It'll be interesting to see how he goes at Barcelona. I think it's Barcelona this weekend.
Oh, is it?
Ooh. It is. Yeah, it's round two. Great. Weekend. So
that will be interesting, actually, to see how they go. Yes, very much so. Yeah, very much so.
But no, the next round is next weekend, not this weekend.
Okay, Stephen, I think what we'll do now, we'll have a short break and we'll listen to a chat I had with Max Davidson about Formula One. Hello, Max.
Hello, how are you?
Very well, how's it going?
Yeah, not too bad, thank you. How are you?
Good, yeah, very well. Now, you've been watching Formula One, is that right?
Yeah, I've watched the last two races.
Well done for doing that, because myself and my brother, we don't watch Formula One at all. I'm not exaggerating here, Max. I have not watched even 1 second of anything to do with Formula One. So no practice, no qualifying, no short highlights on YouTube. I haven't watched 1 second. So thank goodness you're sticking with Formula One. So I do know the results. So I do check the results. No great surprise that I'm right in saying that both races, was it Bahrain the first round?
Yeah, Bahrain and Jeddah.
And they were both 1-2s for Red Bull. Verstappen first, Perez second. Is that right?
Jeddah was definitely a Red Bull 1-2. And I'm pretty sure Bahrain was. Sainz got on the podium, but I think he came P3. So yeah, it would be a Red Bull 1-2.
Excellent. Did you enjoy either races?
No.
So what can you tell us about the races? I mean,
they were both pretty boring. I'm a Max fan. I have been for years, but even right. I think this is boring. I like seeing him win, but with a bit of competition would be nice.
That's interesting, isn't it? So you're a big Max Verstappen Red Bull fan.
Yeah.
And even you're growing tired of it. So this is the third year, isn't it, of Max Verstappen sort of domination.
Yeah.
Was there much overtaking in the races?
I think Bahrain Max won by 23 seconds.
Wow.
Not really.
Yeah.
Jeddah was a bit more interesting because Carlos Sainz had an appendicitis. So yeah. He wasn't racing and Ollie Bearman subbed in for him, which was his Formula One debut.
And where did he finish?
P7, which was pretty good going.
Yeah. I've never heard of this chap before. And funny enough, today I was looking, I did a quick internet search about him. And what's interesting is that I think 2 years ago he was in Formula 3. I think he might have won the championship. Correct me if I'm wrong. He might have won the championship 2 years ago. Last year he was in Formula 2. And I think he finished sixth in the championship. I think he won a couple of races. Mm. So he finished his sixth in Formula 2 and on his Formula 1 debut is very competitive straight away.
Yeah.
That to me says one of two things. Either he's an exceptional talent or stepping up to Formula 1 from Formula 2 isn't that difficult. I don't know.
Well, I think it's probably a bit of both. He only had half a practice session before qualifying. Qualified really? P10 and then finished in P7. So he started the weekend in F2. He was actually set to start the F2 race on pole.
Oh, right.
So,
Are you telling me that he actually qualified on pole for the F2 race?
Yeah, he did, yeah.
I didn't know that. So Sainz's withdrawal was quite late in the day then?
Yeah, very late in the day, yeah.
Oh, my word, that's extraordinary. So he had no idea before the race, before the weekend, that he was going to race in Formula 1.
Sainz was on track on... Well, it would have been Saturday. I'm not actually quite sure what day it was because the race was on Saturday. So it must have been Friday.
Yeah. I'm assuming he's obviously their sort of reserve test driver.
He's Haas's reserve driver. And obviously Haas and Ferrari are very closely linked.
Right.
And he's part of the Ferrari Young Drivers Academy.
Yeah. Yeah, that's amazing. Now, you made a point when I sort of, I think, texted you back today, actually. You made a very good point, I think, about sort of the off-track goings-on regarding sort of Christian Horner seems to be... I sort of dominating sort of the sort of media landscape more than the actual racing itself.
Yeah, definitely. So Christian Horner's been accused of inappropriate behaviour, which he was then cleared of by Red Bull. Yes. And since then, there have been leaks of messages and images that he's sent.
Right.
There's so many rumours going around, it's not actually sure what's going on. But Joss Verstappen's now banned from the paddock.
Oh, I didn't know that. All I knew was that Joss Verstappen was pushing for Red Bull to get rid of Christian Horner. I didn't know that.
So Joss had a relationship with this woman before Christian.
I didn't know any of this. This is completely new to me. Carry on.
So Joss had a relationship with this woman before Christian Horner. And then I've heard a rumour from someone who is a racing driver that Horner, it's only a rumour, but Horner has something on Joss. So Joss is trying to get him out.
Right. Okay.
By using this woman to get him out before Horner can spill what he knows. So then there's also rumours that Helmut Marko is going to get suspended.
Really?
Because between him and Joss have leaked all the documents, supposedly.
Really?
Yeah, but Max has said if Helmut leaves, he'll leave Red Bull.
Whoa, really?
Well, it wouldn't be a very smart idea, bearing in mind they're completely dominating. No.
Yeah.
And he's been out of the team for 7 or 8 years.
Gosh, I didn't know any of this, Max. Mm. That's incredible. I get the impression with Formula One, because as we all know, it's not particularly exciting nowadays with Verstappen dominating. I get the impression that Formula One actually quite like these sort of stories because it keeps the sport in the headlines. Because the racing isn't doing much for the image of the sport, and I think they quite like it.
Yeah,
they have these scandals.
Imagine so. Quite interestingly. When Lewis announced his move to Ferrari, which was on the 1st of February, no one saw that coming at all. Quite interestingly, that was very highly leaked before it was made public by Ferrari and Lewis. Mm. That was the same day that Formula One said that Andretti couldn't join the sport because they don't have enough heritage.
Yeah.
Racing heritage, which is a bit bonkers, bearing in mind they have a NASCAR team, an Indy team, General Motors.
Yeah.
So it's quite convenient that that got leaked with no other rumours. That got rumoured on the day, almost to avoid the attention being on Andretti's decline.
So you say these are all sort of distractions. So that was the distraction from the Andretti story, and you could argue that the current business with Christian Horner is the distraction from actually the quite uneventful racing.
Yeah, and now Ben Salem, who's the FIA president, he's under investigation by the FIA for results fixing.
Yeah, I did see a headline about that. Do you know any more about it? I didn't.
It's something to do with Alonso got given a 5-second penalty. I think it was in Jeddah last year. And basically, Ben Salem said that penalty, get a rid of it. And it was gotten a rid of. So that's being investigated, but there's no real leaks or rumours on that.
Right. Gosh, there's lots of... Yeah, so as the racing isn't making the headlines, but all these sort of scandals are.
Yeah.
I've got a question. I think is it the Australian Grand Prix this weekend, or is it coming up?
Yeah, it's this weekend, I think.
Are you going to stick with Formula One? Are you going to watch the races? I mean, you watched the first two. Are you going to carry on watching?
To be honest, the only reason I watch the last two is I work on Sundays, so I can't watch the race on a Sunday unless it's in the evening. Yeah. And I was just sat at home. Otherwise, I wouldn't stay in to watch it. I wouldn't. If I had something better to do, I wouldn't bother watching it.
Yeah. So, okay. So you may or may not watch the rest of the races. It just depends if you happen to be at home, I suppose.
Basically, yeah.
Another question for you. Joe has now got into the WRC, the World Rally Championship, of which I know absolutely nothing. He's also sort of got into the World Endurance Championship, of course, which I know quite a lot about. Have you got interested in any other forms of motorsport, or is it for you, is it just Formula One?
I haven't really, obviously with my A-levels, I haven't spent much time looking at other motorsports. Yeah, yeah. But I'm sure in summer when I have free time, I will probably look at other racing series. The thing is with Formula One is it's got such a large following. It is the largest motorsport. It's very easy to keep up to date with. And I already have the base of knowledge. If I move to MotoGP or WEC or something like that, it would take ages to gain the knowledge.
I don't think it would, actually, in all fairness. I don't think it would. But I do take your point. Do you think, obviously, Formula One has a huge following. Do you think it's going to keep that huge following?
No. Not if, I don't know. Not if the racing's this boring. They've got a load of American fans, which is great for sport. But if they're tuning in, they've only been fans for a year, maybe 2 years, three years at a push. If they're just watching, they've got no real connection to the racing. Yeah. If they're just watching Max Verstappen win every week, I don't see it lasting long. So I think the FIA and Formula One will be pushing very soon for some sort of regulation, similar to what happened at the end of 2020 season, going into 2021, to limit the dominant team, which was at the time Mercedes, and now would be Red Bull.
I think all those new fans who've been drawn in, I think, by Netflix's Drive to Survive, I think they'll all abandon the sport, and I think you'll just be left with your sort of diehard F1 enthusiasts. Because before Drive to Survive, attendances at Grand Prix, I think, had gone down tremendously. And again, this is before sort of Max Verstappen as well. I remember sort of seeing, you know, lots of empty grandstands at places like Hungary. And I think it's been the Drive to Survive and also Max Verstappen, because the Dutch are very good supporters, aren't they? They go to these races in the tens of thousands. Yeah, I've got a feeling that I think, you know, obviously the Dutch will always go to Spa and places like that. But I suspect we're going to see, I think once Formula One becomes sort of less fashionable for the Instagram, TikTok generation, I think we're going to see sort of a reduction in attendances at Grand Prix.
Well, I think Formula One needs to be very careful because they're giving three races currently in America. Possibly another one is on the cards in Chicago. And diehard racing fans don't want to see this. They've moved Barcelona to, I think it's Madrid. Diehard racing fans don't want to see this. Yeah. And if they're not careful, they're going to lose both sides. They're going to lose the old diehard fans because it's boring. Yeah. Racetracks are boring. And dominance can only last a certain amount of time, but it is incredibly boring. And then they'll also end up losing the American fans, and they'll invest millions of pounds and lose billions of pounds and lose hundreds of thousands of viewers because it is so boring. So the next regulation changes in 2026. I'd be very surprised if they don't come up with something at the end of this season.
Yeah, you made a good point there, haven't you? But by moving away from some more traditional circuits to new tracks in America, those diehard, they're going to lose their diehard fans. And of course, you know, we know that the TikTok generation, they won't hang around for much longer. So yeah, they might end up sort of getting rid of their entire fan base. If we go back, Max, 40 years ago, I was a massive, massive, massive Formula One fan. I watched everything, read everything. I was obsessed with the sport. And now I don't watch any of it at all. And interesting how Joe was big into Formula One. Don't think he watches it at all now. He's more in WRC and the WEC. Finn, I know Finn's dad likes Formula One. So Finn probably gets to watch the occasional race, but I think he's more interested in MotoGP. So it'd be interesting to see how many more races you watch this season.
I can't imagine myself watching more than another three races, maybe evening races. Yeah. I quite enjoy coming back from work or being out for the day. It's nice, something to watch, really. I think last season I only watched maybe three or four races in total.
Oh, right. Yeah.
It's just incredibly boring.
Yeah. Yeah. What we're going to do with these recordings, we won't do them on a weekly basis. We're going to do them on a monthly basis. You know, perhaps next month or month after, Max, if we can have you back on updating us with Formula One. I suspect every race will still be a Red Bull 1-2 and Verstappen will have a huge championship lead. But are you happy to come back next month?
Yeah, of course. I'd love to.
Brilliant. Excellent. Well, we'll leave it there, Max, and we'll see you next month.
Brilliant. Thank you for having me.
Okay, so it's back to you and me now, Stephen, after Max's chat about Formula One. We had the opening round of the WEC. That was weekend before last. So that was the weekend before the MotoGP. Results. It was quite a long race. Was it like a 9-hour race?
It was.
It went virtually 10 hours, yes. It was a long race.
10-hour race at Qatar. That was won by Penske. Well, it was a Porsche 123, wasn't it?
It was Porsche 123, yes, that's right.
Factory Penske Porsche in first. It was the privateer Jota team in second and the factory Penske Porsche in third, I think.
That's right, yes.
Okay, what's your sort of takeaway from the opening round of the WEC then, Stephen?
Well, a number of things, actually. First of all, the grid is just sensational. More hypercars this year, BMW, Alpine, Lamborghini joining the hypercar grid. And the change to GT3 as well gave the GT class a very different look as well. I think in all the years I've been following World Endurance, this has to be the finest grid of cars across the board that I've ever seen. And so that alone was just sensational. I thought the race was great. Porsche have clearly been doing their homework over the winter and ironed out some of the glitches, so they're going very well. I was very surprised, actually, how poor Toyota went, actually. They salvaged a sixth and a ninth, but considering they're the dominant team, and they had a clean race as well, so that was just on pace. Ferrari had all sorts of problems. The AF Corsa actually finished fifth, so that was the highest of those three cars. It was the yellow one that finished the top. All sorts of issues, driver issues, what have you. So not a clean race for Ferrari. I'm sure they'll come good. But the heartbreak of the race course was Peugeot, who was running second for virtually the entire distance, challenged for lead early on. This configuration of circuit and the smoothness of it really suited the car, but goodness me, it seemed to run out of fuel at the end, and we're not quite sure if that's pit stop trouble or that's the fact there was enough fuel in but the car wasn't picking it up, so I don't know what that is. More concerning though was that the other car had a battery issue, so I don't quite understand how after nearly 2 years of running, certainly a year and a half of competition, we're still having reliability. If you want to win Le Mans, you've got to be finishing 10-hour races. Both cars. So gutted for the Peugeot team, I must say. I really, really hope they would finish second, but unfortunately it went away from them.
My thoughts, like you, I thought it was a good race, lots of interest throughout the sort of 9 hours or so. Qatar, you know, isn't a bad circuit. It's just a shame. We knew it was never going to draw a large crowd. It's a shame you've got this golden era, this opening round of this incredible championship, performing in front of a very small crowd, which was inevitable. So last year, you know, we started at Sebring, you know, which draws, you know, tens of thousands. So the circuit's not bad. It's just obviously slightly lacking in atmosphere, wasn't it? Because you haven't got those banks of sort of thousands of spectators there. Now, I read the other day that they're going to make balance of performance adjustments between each race. I'm slightly concerned about that. What I don't want to see is a championship whereby the winners of the previous round are sort of handicapped so much they're not competitive in the next round. Hopefully that won't be the case. I don't want Porsche to be, you know, given lots of sort of, you know, added weight and what have you, and slow down to such an extent they're not competitive at Imola.
No, I haven't been following the BOP thing that closely, but I hope it doesn't go the IMSA route where they're always tweaking with it.
You know, talking about IMSA, I remember a few years ago when they had the, they were trying to make the LMP2s competitive with the, I think, the DPI cars.
Yes.
And what they did was they pegged back the DPI cars so much that the LMP2s were able to challenge for victories. Now, you might think that's amazing. So you got all these cars in with a shout of winning. I actually stopped. I actually lost interest because I didn't really know what I was watching. It just felt incredibly artificial.
Yeah. Yeah.
And I just hope the WEC doesn't go that way.
I agree. It should be horses, of course. Some cars will do well at some circuits, other cars will do well at others, and it's how it flows over the season. So,
but also Porsche have been doing an awful lot of testing. They've done a really good job.
Yeah,
you can't be penalised for doing a good job.
Agreed. And you also can't give people a leg up if they're not doing a good job either. Right. I think they have to sort of on merit get there. So,
I read somewhere that sort of conspiracy theories that teams like Toyota might have been sandbagging, and you might say, well, why? Okay, if they were sandbagging, why doesn't Porsche do the same? And they're saying the trouble with Porsche is because they've got privateer entrants. Those privateer teams are going to go flat out. So there's no way the factory Penske Porsche team can sandbag because their privateers won't be sandbagging.
No. Exactly.
Whereas your Toyotas, I'm not saying they were sandbagging, but they might have been in order to get a better balance of performance when it comes to Le Mans. So that may, I doubt that was the case, but it just might be.
Hey, who knows? I doubt it somehow. I think when you're in a race situation, you can't be sandbagging because you just don't know how it's going to go. But interesting start, looking forward to seeing how the rest of the season goes.
In terms of the new entrance to the championship, I think probably Alpine came out best.
Yeah, finished eighth.
They got a top 10 finish, and I have to say the Alpine looks amazing. The colour scheme is fantastic. It looks brilliant. Yeah, but the consensus was that the Lamborghini are some way off the pace. And is it concerningly off the pace? And in some ways, that doesn't surprise me because they've gone for the Ligier chassis. And I was thinking, you know, Ligier, look at the LMP2 car, was not competitive, was it, compared to the Eureka? And I was thinking, a car based around the Ligier chassis might not be that competitive. And they are some way off the pace.
We'll have to see. I mean, it is early days, and they're not as big a outfit as, you know, the Porsches and the Toyotas and the Ferraris of this world. So, although they are a factory team, they're not as, you know, probably haven't got the funds, hence they're only running one car. But I think it's fantastic. I like the look of it.
It looks nice.
Having Lamborghini in India, I think it can only get better. So, but I think what surprised me slightly was BMW weren't quite, didn't make the top 10.
No.
And that's after one season in IMSA. So I had a bit of a theory about this, actually, which I probably isn't right. But in IMSA, they throw the safety cars out.
A lot.
And the race never has a chance to elongate in terms of the field's always bunching up as of hourly. So if you can stay on the lead lap, you won't lose a lap because, of course, the field bunches up again. And even if you do lose a lap or two, you can generally get those laps back. So if for example, over a 12-hour race, you finish on the lead lap or you're within sort of half a minute of the leader because the field's been, that possibly gives you an artificial view on how competitive you are.
Yeah.
And in these races, they use four course yellows. There were no safety cars, so you get a true you get a true perspective of how competitive you are over 10 hours because you've lost, you know, two or three laps. So that's only a theory of mine because IMSA is different. The way the races are on are different. But I thought they'd be a bit more competitive than they were, and I'm sure it'll come. But I thought they'd be a bit harder than they were.
Yeah. On the subject of IMSA, it's the Sebring 12 Hours this weekend.
Right, I didn't know that either. Actually, I must say I'm not well up on the IMSA. Yeah,
unfortunately, I'm going to struggle to follow because I'm off to Zermatt skiing at the weekend. But hopefully, I'll be able to see. I mean, maybe I'll be able to get it on my phone, perhaps.
Yes.
So I will try and tune into that because I mean, Sebring is a brilliant event.
Yeah.
So I think we'll probably stop there. We'll probably get together maybe 3 or 4 weeks time. We've got two rounds of the MotoGP coming up fairly soon. We've got Portugal and then Circuit of the Americas. So probably after the COTA race, we'll probably get together. And that's also before, just before I go off to Imola. I'm going to the second round of the WEC. So it might be an idea if we get together. Hopefully Joe will be able to join us. Joe couldn't join us today because he's got, I think, his Spanish oral or something tomorrow.
Yeah.
He wanted to do a recording at the weekend, but I said, look, I'm in Switzerland, so that wasn't possible. So Joe should be with us next time. He's going to talk about the WRC, which he's really keen on. Thanks for that, Stephen. I say we'll get back together in about 3 or 4 weeks' time.
Yeah, will do.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house, with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. warbyparker.com/covered.
Welcome to Sincerely Sloan, presented by Uninterrupted. I'm your host, professional tennis player, wife, parent, and entrepreneur, Sloan Stevens. As an athlete and as a person, my journey has had a lot of twists and turns, from moments of adversity and doubt to unimaginable triumph and satisfaction. Throughout the season, I'm joined by some of the biggest names in sports, entertainment, culture, and a few members of my tribe. Our conversations keep it real and push it past skin deep. We reveal the perspectives, routines, and products that allow each of us to show up at our best. Join me on my journey of self-discovery and many, many laughs along the way. Sincerely, Sloan.
Thank you for listening to this episode of Pit Stop with Mr. Bird. There's a few new things I want to make you aware of. We've got a new website, which you can find by going online to shows.acast.com/pitstop, where you can also find links to our Twitter and on the About page, more information about the hosts as well. We're also on lots more platforms in addition to where you're listening to us now. So we're now on Spotify, Google Podcasts, iTunes, Apple Podcasts and Amazon Music and lots more, as well as TuneIn, like we've been on since we started. So head over to those platforms to subscribe on the most convenient one for you and find all our back catalogue of episodes to listen to again as well.